Sutars, one word, that's Sutchars .com, to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner for which you will be included into the course. Letting it drop. The material being presented is formatted from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made, and in keeping with not interrupting the class in session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program at VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Before we start this evening's program, it should be mentioned that the material being covered is based on the new Q&A pool that came out July the 1st, 2014. This means that this material should not be used for any other material other than what we're using tonight. So if you're using some older book, please look for on our website for the July 1, 2014 Q&A for technician class. It should be further mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing session on this server, please drop us an email at VOIP at voipnet.southcars.com. Do we have any emergency or out of the ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Okay, my name is Mike. That's Mike India Kilo Echo. My call sign is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec. And I am the opening. I'm the moderator and the opening this evening. I am located in Olathe, Kansas, which is just southwest of Kansas City, Missouri. Now tonight we've got two fine instructors. We're going international on you tonight. Tonight we're going to have with us Bill, who is VE3MEW. That's a Canadian call sign. He'll be starting out this evening. And with Bill is Paul, WQ1I, located up in good old sunny New England somewhere. It probably lets you know exactly where he is. So this evening, we'll be using the new question pool, and they'll be reading a question, which they have selected, and they'll give you the answer to that question, and there will be a pause. So during that time, they'll ask, do you have any questions or anything further you'd like explained in that particular question or anything that relates to that? We're open to you. This is not a private one-directional net. This is a class that goes round and round. We give you some information, and if you want some more information, just come back on the air, give us your suffix. Well, now for you that don't have a license yet, just give us your name. Give us your name, we'll hear you on Skype, and we'll give you the floor, and we'll listen to your questions. So, without any further ado, like they say somewhere, I'm going over the border, jumping up to Canada. I'm going to VE3MEW. Bill, take it away.
Yeah, okay, Mike. Good evening. This is VE3MEW. Just a brief little statement here to get started. My name is Bill, located in Peterborough, Ontario, and which is about 95 miles northeast of Toronto. Why is a Canadian teaching an American course? Well, why not? There are some differences between the Canadian regulations, Canadian amateur radio requirements for licensing, and the American one. And I am an instructor for the courses we hold here in Peterborough for the Peterborough Amateur Radio Club, as well as an examiner, accredited examiner for industry Canada, and conduct exams for people that want to get their license. I want to tell you right off the bat, folks, you guys got it easy compared to the courses between the questions and so on and the exams from one side of the board to the other. You guys got it a lot easier than we do up here, let me tell you. I'd be happy to explain some of that to you at length at another time, but I can assure you that you'd find it a little bit more difficult to get your license up here in Canada than you would down where you are. But anyway, never mind. That's not the point. Regulations are regulations, and most of ours are similar to yours. and amateur radio is the same. Electronics is electronics, and that's a... Unfortunately, this material we're going to present tonight is not all that exciting. There's no electrons involved and no transistors or tubes. It's rather boring and dry, but it's necessary. It's what helps control and moderate our hobby and keeps us a couple of levels above the CB band, so, or a few more, hopefully. Whatever. Anyhow, I'm going to drop it for a second and we'll get started. All right, V3MEW back here again. And first question, T1A05. Which of the following is a purpose of the amateur radio service rules and regulations as defined by the FCC? There are four answers to choose from. Enhancing international goodwill, providing inexpensive communication for local emergency organizations, training of operators in military radio operating procedures, and all of these choices are correct. So the answer is A, enhancing international goodwill. There's not a whole lot you can say about these regulations, folks. Just read them over as many times as it takes until most of them are kind of lodged in your memory cells, and that's about it. There's not much we can explain to it. So I'm going to turn this over to a very able gentleman, my friend and partner, WQ1I, V3MEW.
Okay, Bill, thanks a lot. I appreciate that, and appreciate, once again, the reminder that we've got it easy compared to Canada. We get this every class, folks. You'll get used to it. But, Bill, thank you very much. And, Mike, thank you for being here today. I have never heard in my life New England described as sunny New England, even though today that would have been true. I've heard sunny Florida, maybe even sunny California, but generally speaking, that's not the descriptor for New England, though it was a beautiful sunny day today. And I am here in Connecticut, Danbury, Connecticut, in fact, in particular. And down in the, this would be the southwest corner of the state of Connecticut. And we're here to enjoy ourselves today and try and make these commissioner's rules type of questions as not as boring as they really are, as they really are. We'll see what we can do. Let me drop this for a second. And we'll start it up with my first question, which is Tango 1 Alpha 9. Tango 1 Alpha 9. And the question reads, who selects a frequency coordinator? And we've got the usual four choices here. A, the FCC Office of Spectrum Management and Coordination Policy. That sounds pretty official. B, the local chapter of the Office of National Council of Independent Frequency Coordinators. C, amateur operators in a local or regional area whose stations are eligible to be auxiliary or repeater stations. Or D, FCC regional field office. And the answer is C, amateur operators in a local or regional area whose stations are eligible to be auxiliary or repeater stations. Now, one of the things that you might want to remember when, you know, learning these questions, that there are certain trends here, and the trend in this one is you're going to read all over and over again in various different questions that it is the amateur operators themselves who police themselves. This is set up that way by the FCC, and what they're talking about here in particular are repeaters that are owned privately by amateur radio operators and used by other amateurs. And generally speaking, they are in a particular band. They occupy a particular location in that band. They're kind of grouped together. And these coordinators that they're talking about, what they try and do is keep things from getting messy. And making suggestions as to where the operating frequencies for like a new repeater coming in would be to try and avoid interference and all other kinds of problems. But the answer to the question is that it is the amateurs themselves, a committee of amateurs who take on these responsibilities. The government doesn't do it, and we take care of these things ourselves. So that's basically how it works. That's the answer to the question. I'll leave a pause if anybody has any questions, and then we'll throw it back to Bill, the E3MEW. This is WQ1I.
This is V3MEW. If I could comment a little further on that last question, maybe somebody doesn't know the fact that there are frequency coordinators who are set up for other bands besides just repeaters, besides 2 meters and 440 band or the 70 centimeter band. There's also frequency coordinators for beacons, such as 6-meter beacons and 10-meter beacons. And again, the idea is to minimize or eliminate as much interference as is possible from one to the other. The only repeater council I'm aware of is the Western New York Repeater Council, which looks after coordinating the frequencies all across the southern shore of Lake Ontario and the north shore of Lake Ontario, so that because our signals are able to go across the lake. I can sit here right here now and key up a repeater in Buffalo or down in Rochester without any trouble at all. And so if I want to put up a repeater or a beacon of some kind, we check with these people and they find out how much power we're going to run. They put a circle on the map which will indicate our coverage, and then they check to see who may be in those coverage in that area, and try and suggest frequencies that will not interfere with other stations which are already there and established and operating. Okay, I'll buy myself a quick nickel here and then move along. Question T1B02. Why are the frequency assignments for some U.S. territories different from those in the 50 U.S. states? That's a good question. Sometimes remember, too, when you're taking your exam, to read the questions over two or three times to make sure that you are fully aware of what the question is asking you for. Try and pick up on some specific key words in the question. Okay, answer A. Some U.S. territories are located in ITU regions other than Region 2. B. Territorial governments are allowed to select their own frequency allocations. Number C, territorial frequency allocations may also include those of adjacent countries. And D, any territory that was in existence before the ratification of the Communications Act of 1934 is exempt from FCC frequency regulations. Boy, somebody's get pretty convoluted, I'm telling you. Anyway, the correct answer is A. Some U.S. territories are located in ITU region other than Region 2, which is where I am. So there are specific frequency assignments for each region around the world. Some may be same and some are different. So all that information is available if you choose to look it up. But that's the reason for this particular question, and that's the answer. So if anyone has any questions on that, be sure and ask us. So we'll turn that over to Paul, E3MEW.
Okay, Bill, thank you. And the next question that we've got here tonight is Tangle 1 Bravo 9. And the question reads, why should you not set your transmit frequency to be exactly at the edge of an amateur band or subband? Why should you not set your transmit frequency to be exactly at the edge of an amateur band or subband? A. To allow for calibration error in the transmitter frequency display. B. So that modulation sidebands do not extend beyond the band edge. C. To allow for transmitter frequency drift. D. All of these choices are correct. And the answer is, in fact, D. All of these choices are correct. Now, you have to be careful. You know, the amateur bands are specified areas, designated areas where we're allowed to operate, and they have boundaries you know, related to their frequency. And what they're talking about is that you're at the either very top or the very bottom of the band. And if you dial your radio in to that particular frequency, at the very, very edge, you're going to be in trouble. Because you need to make sure that your entire signal that you're transmitting is within that allowable frequency range, within that band. And when you are transmitting, say, an FM signal, that signal can be 15 kilohertz wide. 15 kilohertz wide, say, 10 to 15. And so you're going to have part of your signal sloughing off the edge of the band into an area where you're not permitted to transmit. All the different modes of operations have different bandwidths, and you need to be aware of them, and you need to make sure that you're not encroaching too close to that band edge where you might be transmitting in an area where you're not otherwise permitted. So that's the answer. And the other, let me drop it just for a second. And the other answers, are all very good reasons to stay away from the very edge. You don't know if your radio hasn't been calibrated, that what you're reading on that dial may not be, you know, completely accurate. And yes, you can have transmitter drift. And so all of those reasons are good reasons to watch the edge and not be too close to it. Bill, back to you, WQNI.
Okay, Paul. Well, that's a good question. Indeed, interesting. Next one, T1 Charlie 7, T1C7. What may result when correspondence from the FCC is returned as undeliverable because the grantee failed to provide the correct mailing address? Oh, interesting. A, fine or imprisonment. B, revocation of the station license or suspension of the operator license. C, require the licensee to be re-examined. Boy, I hope not. D, a reduction of one rank in operator class. Now, that'd be strange, wouldn't it? What if you're already at the bottom? Boy, oh boy. Anyway, the correct answer, ladies and gentlemen, is revocation of the station licensee license or suspension of the operator license. So if the FCC cannot communicate with you by mail, you have a problem. And there's your answer. So nothing much more I can say on that one. So that's it for me, and over to you, Paul, the E3MEW.
Okay, Bill, very good. Thank you for that. Yeah, I wouldn't I wouldn't have to be re-examined either. I don't think I'd want to do that. Anyway, the next question, folks. Tangle 1, Delta 1, Part 97 of the FCC rules. With which countries are FCC licensed amateur radio stations prohibited from exchanging communications? Which countries are FCC licensed amateur stations prohibited from exchanging communications? A, any country whose administration has notified the ITU that it objects to such communications. B, any country whose administration has notified the ARRL that it objects to such communications. C, any country engaged in hostilities with another country. Well, that would eliminate a few, I guess. And D, any country in violation of the War Powers Act of 1934. My. The answer is A, any country whose administration has notified the ITU that it objects to such communications. Okay, generally speaking, unless specifically prohibited by the government of either country, a ham can talk to any other ham. International communications must be limited to the purposes of the amateur service. And to make sure that your remarks are of a personal or technical nature. But generally speaking, the number of countries that you're not allowed to talk to are pretty small and few between. So, but that is the answer to that question. And again, it was A, any country whose administration has notified the ATU, not the ARRL, that it objects to such communications. Bill?
Six Victor.
Go ahead, Six Victor.
Well, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Bill.
Okay, this is B3MEW. We seem to have a temporary audio problem with Gord there. Don't know what's going on, but anyway. Okay, and by the way, for your interest, Mike, you can talk to Israel through D-Star. They were on there yesterday, and they were on there today. I was riding around in the car listening to them. So they are available. Okay. Now, moving along here. By the way, Paul, here's an exercise for you early in the morning. You get up right off the bat before you've had a coffee. You grab a hold of that question and start rattling it off. With which countries are... oh, boy. You'd have fun with that. Anyway, just kidding. Next question. T1D06. What, if any, are the restrictions concerning transmission of language that may be considered indecent or obscene? Oh, boy. Restrictions concerning transmission, language that may be considered indecent or obscene. A, the FCC maintains a list of words that are not permitted to be used on amateur frequencies. I didn't know that. B, any such language is prohibited. C, the ITU maintains a list of words that are not permitted to be used on amateur frequencies. Didn't know that either. D, there are no such prohibition. Well, the correct answer is B. Any such language is prohibited. That doesn't mean you won't hear it from time to time. There are some people out there who have lowered their standards, lower than what we're talking about here. And some of the language is I wouldn't want my grandkids listening to it, that's for sure. Anyway, it's always something to stop and think about. Especially if you start talking about some subjects and so on, it may generate some controversy, and you may be perfectly calm and happy to talk about sex or politics or religion or anything and not get upset or uptight. But that doesn't mean everybody else is. So, anyway, I see, according to the text box, Mike A00 has a question. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Mike. KD0CDQ, this is V3MEW.
Yes, I'm asking KM4AO.
Yeah, going back to the first two questions, is that why they don't put repeaters when they coordinate them? Is that why they don't put the inputs or the outputs at the edge of the band?
Oh, if the question pertains to one of the test questions or just a question in general. Richard, go ahead, please. Well, Bill, I don't know if you want to handle that one, but that would be a reason. But I do know that they regulate our repeaters because here in Kansas, we're so central, they have to be guarded where you're allowed to place a repeater. So we're not allowed to have any repeaters that can overlap. That's what I am aware of here in the Midwest. But there may be more to it, Bill or Gordon. You may have more to it. But no, they wouldn't place it near the edge at all, I wouldn't expect. Anyone want to feel?
This is B3MEW. You have a certain band spread for different modes and different frequency areas of operation. And obviously when you're talking FM up around repeaters, you have a fairly wide band spread, 12 or more kilohertz, and you certainly don't want to be operating outside any set band limits. So if, for example, a band limit is a 144.8 kilohertz, you don't want to be setting your frequency low enough to be spreading down below that if it can be helped. So we have, for example, here just south of me, a repeater that I use on a regular basis, 144.150 is the frequency. But we don't interfere with anybody, and nobody else interferes with us. That's the key element here. Is that, but our, of course, don't forget our band limits and our band edges here are set differently than yours are. But the key element here is that we're not interfering with another repeater that's on the same frequency. Now, if somebody across the lake decided tomorrow they wanted to open up a repeater with the same input and output frequencies, there'd be a problem. And we'd be constantly keying each other up, and it would not be a pleasant thing at all. So that's why we have frequency coordination, and they would be advised or highly strongly recommended to set your repeater at a different frequency that would not interfere. Hopefully that answers your question, I hope, and you are correct in your high and low there, except that's for you guys. Ours is a little differently. Back to you, Mike, V3MEW.
That question besides myself, over. Very good. I'm going to remind everyone that this is the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, and what we're doing tonight is a technician class. We're taking the first section, this is the first evening, so we're in the T1 group we're doing tonight, T1. So if anybody is looking at the test questions, or again, it's the new questions from July the 1st of 2014. We're doing the T1, and we'll probably be into the Delta section right about now. So I'm going to turn it back over to Paul. Paul is up there, and I'm going to go to sunny Danbury, Connecticut. WQ1I, you want to take it away with your question, please? Over.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Sunny Danbury, Connecticut it is. And the sun should be out for a little, another good 2 hours, I guess. All right, next question, folks. Tango 1 Delta 12. Under which of the following circumstances may an amateur radio station engage in broadcasting? A. Under no circumstances. B. When transmitting code practice, information bulletins, or transmissions necessary to provide emergency communications. C. At any time, as long as no music is transmitted. Or D. At any time, as long as the material being transmitted did not originate from a commercial broadcast station. No. Answer is B. Under which of the following circumstances may an amateur radio station engage in broadcasting? When transmitting code practice, information bulletins, or transmissions necessary to provide emergency communications. Let me just drop it for a second. And that one, first of all, what does it mean, broadcasting? Well, broadcasting is like what you find on the commercial bands when you turn on your FM radio or AM radio. And they are broadcasting the programming. You get to listen to it, but you don't get to talk back. It's a one-way communication being sent out or broadcasted to the public. Amateur radio service is not for that purpose. And in fact, it's illegal to be broadcasting, except in these circumstances. It's meant for two-way communications. And the notable exception here about code practice and bulletins, anyone who's ever listened to the ARRL station, WA1W or W1AW, knows that they do all of those things. They broadcast Morse code practice sessions, which back in my day when you had to learn code, I did a lot of listening to. They send out bulletins, and all the things listed in this answer are things that they do at W1AW. And I'd be curious to know from Bill if they have a similar setup up in Canada and what the name of that station would be, if there is such a thing. Anyway, any questions, just jump in before Bill picks it up. This is WQ1I in sunny Danbury, Connecticut.
KM4AOO.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, maybe it's different now. But I thought the only other time you could play music is if you got permission from NASA to wake up the... Well, they want my audio. Let me try that again. I thought the only other time you could broadcast is to if you had permission from NASA to wake up the astronauts?
You know, Richard, that's a whole separate question, I would imagine. That's that would be pertaining to music in general, which is normally not permitted. And I guess the real other interesting part of that is it's not one of the answers here on the question. So, whew. Bill, if you'd like to address that about the space station, I know that Bill's been trying to get into that space station for quite some time now, as a matter of fact. Maybe you could give us a comment on that one there, Richard. Bill, over to you, WQNI.
Okay, Paul, thanks. It's me, 3MEW. Music is used to wake up the astronauts, but I must tell you, it's not on the amateur radio frequencies. Those are on separate government frequencies allocated to communicate between ground and the International Space Station or other astronaut people that are floating around up there. But no, we're not allowed to put music up over the amateur radio frequencies. And in relation to what Paul was saying about broadcasting, you might be interested to know that, for example, here in Canada sometimes we'll have somebody who's well-meaning, but well-meaning but practicing on an illegal event here. They'll be going down the road and they might see a police radar installation. So they come on the repeater and they broadcast without making a call. They don't call out to anybody. They might say, this is VA3XXX, and watch out, folks. There's a radar, black and white, at such and such an intersection, blah, 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 and then away they go. That is against the law. Absolutely, completely, and totally against the law. They didn't call anybody in specific. There was no station called. You're generating information to the general public, which is not meant to be broadcast to them in the first place. Or we'll have people come on there, for example, and say, I was just scanning the fire department and I found out that such and such a house is on fire in such and such a street. Well, okay, there may be some relevance there as far as safety is concerned, but without calling a specific station to announce that information, that is illegal. And that information is not intended to be broadcast to the general public in the first place. So that's an example of broadcasting things, about that. If you want to broadcast that there's an accident somewhere or this is happening or whatever, that's not your job, first of all. But if you want to tell somebody about that, you call a specific person and get a reply and then go ahead and tell them, hey, hi, George, how you doing? Nice day this afternoon. It's not raining and it's sunny and so on. And by the way, there's an accident at such and such an intersection. There's four people laying on the road dead and so on and so forth. So, no, it's best to keep quiet about that information and not be broadcasting it on a repeater. And if you check further in depth in the regulations, I know for a fact it's illegal in Canada. And it's also, to the best of my knowledge, illegal in the States. And it's also illegal, to my understanding from what I've read, if you have a scanner in your vehicle and you're picking up broadcasts, that is illegal to spread that information around. Oh, boy. Okay, here we go. Moving along to the next one here. T1E2. Who may a station license designate, who may a station licensee designate to be the control operator of an amateur station? A, any U.S. citizen or registered alien. If I were down there, I'd be an alien. B, any family member of the station licensee. C, any person over the age of 18. D, only a person for whom an amateur operator primary station licensee grant appears in the FCC database, or who is authorized for alien reciprocal operation. That would be me. There you go. The answer is D. Only a person for whom an amateur operator primary station license grant appears in the database, somebody, in other words, that's been tested, passed the exam, and the FCC says, okay, here's your license, or who is authorized for alien reciprocal operation. So that's the answer for that one. All right.
Okay, Bill, very good. And thanks for the expanding on the last question.
I don't...
Let me see if I haven't gotten myself lost here. My next question. Okay, how's that? I just realized that this microphone wasn't anywhere near my mouth. Here we go. Tangle 1, Foxtrot 4. Which of the following is an acceptable language to use for station identification when operating in a phone subband? A. Any language recognized by the United Nations. B. These answers is coming in the United Nations. B. Any language recognized by the ITU. C. The English language. D. English, French, or Spanish. And in our case, on this side of the pond, or the lake, as Bill calls it, the answer is C. The English language is the language to be used when identifying your station. Now, if you were, you could be having a conversation in a completely different language. You can be talking to someone in French or Spanish or German, and that's no problem. That is not verboten. But when it comes time for you to identify, you need to identify.
I think there should be a whole lot of questions over that particular question. Over to you, Paul, the E3MEW.
And we'll throw it back up north to the other side of the lake to Bill, the E3MEW from WQ1I.
Okay, Paul, very good. Yeah, I know this material, some of it may seem boring and tiresome and not very exciting. And we're not talking about tubes or transistors or, you know, impedance calculations and all that other neat stuff. We're not building any antennas here, and it's, oh boy. But you just read, all you can do is just read it through time and time and time again until you're sick and tired of it, and enough of it soaks in that when you see these questions come up on the exam, you'll have enough information to formulate and pick hopefully a right answer. Question T1F6. Which of the following formats of a self-assigned indicator is acceptable when identifying using a phone transmission? Now that's a bit of a tongue twister question. Which of the following formats of a self-assigned indicator is acceptable when identifying using a phone transmission? Some of that question could be confusing. Okay, A, KL7CC stroke W3. B, KL7CC slant W3. C, KL7CC slash W3. All of these choices are correct. And the correct answer is D. Each of these is correct. So KL means the guy is from Alaska right off the bat. That's the first thing you can determine from there. This guy's from Alaska. And W3, he's down visiting in W3 land. It could be Pennsylvania, for example. And so he wants to identify through a repeater, or he wants to identify when he's working HF. They're talking to somebody, and he says KL7CC stroke W3. Similar to what I do when I cross the border. I say V3MEW stroke W2 or W3, whatever I am. Or if I'm Florida, it's V3MEW stroke W4. And those are the choices that are correct. But I could use slant W3 or slash W3. Any of those would be correct. Okay. And KM4A00 has a question. So KM4A00. Go ahead, V3MEW.
Yeah, KM4A00. Does that apply when you go to other countries too? Say you go to England or Germany, you know, I'd say Kilo Mike 4, Alpha Oscar Oscar slash Golf 4, or Kilo Mike 4, Alpha Oscar Oscar slash Delta Bravo 0. Would that apply to that too?
I can't give you an accurate answer on that, Richard. I can tell you that is the understanding, agreement between Canada and the United States. Whether you come up here to Canada or whether you go down to, whether I go down there to Florida or wherever. As for what it is in England or Ireland or France or Germany, my only recommendation, this is what I would do personally if I was going to go over there to Germany or England to and wanted to operate. I would look up their regulations. I would talk to somebody I knew over there or that I would find on the band and get them to help me and give me that information before I got there, so that when I stepped off the plane, I would have whatever I needed to operate correctly. The same thing as I would expect that when you come up to Canada, you would object with some Canadian to see if there's anything odd or different up here that might not be the same as where you are. So just because you know the regulations and the rules in your country doesn't mean they're exactly the same here, even though many of them are. There are some differences, and it's your responsibility as an operator to know those differences and abide by them. So that's the way the situation is at my end. Hopefully that answers your question there, Richard. If you have any further, please go ahead and ask. And if not, I'm going to turn it over to Paul with the E3MEW.
Nope, I don't. Maybe after the net, I'll get with you on that Canadian thing. So, same for AOO. Over to you, Paul.
Okay. Next question. We are at Tango 1 Foxtrot 10. Love these numbers. Who is accountable should a repeater inadvertently retransmit communications that violate the FCC rules? Oh, that's a good question. A, the control operator of the originating station. B, the control operator of the repeater. C, the owner of the repeater. B, both the originating station and the repeater owner. Well, the answer is A, the control operator of the originating station. And if you think about it, this is kind of like a common sense answer. The people who are the control operators of a repeater, if someone's a control operator of the repeater, they have you know, their own rules and regulations that they need to follow to make sure that everything is kosher, as we might say, with the repeater. And but if I then go and use that computer and decide I want to sing, play music, use inappropriate language, that's on me. That would be my problem, and I would be the one who was responsible for and the one who would get in trouble with the FCC for doing that. And it would seem to me unfair if the FCC could turn around and then blame or fine or pull a license from the repeater operator controller who you know, had nothing to do with this. So that's the answer, folks. The control operator of the originating station, the guy using the repeater inappropriately. Bill, up to you, WQ1I.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Up here, in order to have a repeater, and we have several of them in the city, each repeater has to have what's called a sponsor. Somebody's call sign. Somebody has to hold that call sign. There has to be a name registered with Industry Canada that says, hey, VE3PBO, who is the person responsible for that repeater? And in this particular case, it's me. So I have my name behind two repeaters in Peterborough here. I am the trustee, if you will. And guess what? Things are a little different up here, my friend. If you come up here and start cussing and swearing over the repeater in Peterborough, and somebody complains, and there will be, there's lots of shortwave listeners, as we call them, who are not licensed, who are listening, though, nevertheless, they're interested, but not enough to get on the air and actually talk, there will be a complaint. And guess who Industry Canada is going to come to the door knocking? And that's my door. They're going to say, what the heck is going on? Blah, blah, we got this and that. Yeah, okay. Who is the call sign? Then they're going to go for the other person. But in the first instance, I'm the one whose name is on the line. And I monitor the V3PBO quite a bit. Not at 3 o'clock in the morning, mind you, but a fair bit. And we have facilities in place to shut it down if there's a problem. And there has been the odd time we've had to do exactly that. So I'm just telling you, things are, that's a little bit of a difference between here and there, Paul. Back to you, V3MEW.
Okay, roger that, Bill. That is interesting. But you know, it almost seems like if you're going to be held responsible, I mean, to the point that you could be fined or lose your license or something, some kind of, you know, disciplinary action taken, then it seems like they shouldn't allow for automatic operations of repeaters in general. And, you know, unless you're actually there with your finger on the switch as a control operator, then, you know, I don't see how else you could do that. Like you say, at 3 a.m., it doesn't seem, I don't understand how that could be your responsibility. I mean, you know, in the abstract, I can understand that. But what really surprises me, though, Bill, is that I wasn't even aware. That was the last question for the evening. We've made it. We've made it through. We've got 10 minutes to spare. So I don't have anything else. Let me see if you do, Bill. And then after that, why don't you throw it over to Mike and let him take over and see what he's got to say. And we'll see where we're going to go from here. But that are all the questions. see, I can't speak English, so I can't identify properly. WQ1I, up to you, Bill.
Okay, Paul, very good. A3MEW, you got me smiling. you got me laughing now. I can see the smile on your face from here. So definitely a pleasure to work with you again, my friend. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your point of view, we didn't have to go into any grand technical lengthy explanations. There was no math or physics involved. And it's just a question of people reading them over and over and over again until they're bored silly with them and their brain just automatically starts to absorb them. And hopefully they can get enough of them right on the test to go from there. But just as a last little dig for all of you here, just remember, the standard test up here in Canada is 100 questions. The minimum pass mark is 70 correct. And if you want to get all the privileges on the first test, you need to get 80 or above. And the only reason to go for the advanced test up here is if you are inclined to be building your own equipment, which is going to be transmitting a signal on the air, or you wish to be the sponsor for a repeater. You wish to have your name on a repeater to be the person behind the call sign. So that's the situation up here. I'm going to go over to Mike, KD0CDQ. Mike, V3MEW, go ahead, please.
This is KD0CDQ. What a fine job. Both of you have done excellent tonight. I really appreciate it. Bill, Paul, you've done a fine job this evening. And, you know, we Americans don't have enough patience to sit down for 70 questions. Kathy can probably tell you that, she being a school teacher. If we had to go through 100 questions and get 70 right, we'd need a few days to think it over. We wouldn't be able to sit that long. Well, you know, one of the hardest things for a new ham to do is to get on the air, actually get their voice out there. Do we have anybody on Skype? Is there any student on Skype who would like to just say hello, give us your name, tell us where on this planet you are, and if you're not on this planet, make it up that you're here someplace. Don't scare us, please. But if any of you, please, on Skype, would like to come aboard now and say hello and give us your name and tell us where you are and give us a nickel's worth of your mind, we really appreciate it. So anybody on Skype, if you have any question about the questions or just want to say hello, please just come aboard now. We're going to give you an opportunity. Go now. Well, I didn't hear anybody, but my hearing's not that good. They might have been shouting into their Skype machine, but I couldn't hear them. But that is one of the scariest things. So any of you students, if you're listening to this on a recording or you're listening to it live, you will probably have some microphone fright. It's not unusual to happen. You're not an oddball. It happens. But some of us don't know when to shut up. So after a while, it just breaks loose and you just talk away. I know I've had my 2 meter so hot to the touch from talking too long, giving some information over the internet. I mean, over the HF or 2 meter bands. So, but be advised that when you get, if you ever do buy a radio, which I hope that you new folks will buy a radio. That's another hurdle that I see people go through. We get quite a few people out here in the Midwest licensed. We make quite an effort, quite a campaign to license folks out here, but most of them never buy a radio. and even less get on the air. They just don't seem to do it. But people get licensing because a lot of folks that work in the local hospitals or work for local city governments or town governments, they get credit for having a ham license because of the emergency communication aspect of ham radio. We have licensed literally hundreds of hospital workers out here because of our what we call our Kansas City HART, which is the Hospital Emergency Radio Service. We have 52 hospitals in the Kansas City area that are tied together with radios that were purchased through donations and with FEMA money. But the objective was to have hospital employees actually use those radios to transmit information about blood types that are available, beds that are available, and services that are available, such as that. But we keep falling back on the hams. Let it drop. Yes, it keeps falling back on the regular hams, but we have a lot of people licensed in hospitals and local cities. So we keep on licensing people, but I want to see you get on the air. So once you get your license, make an effort to buy a radio. Oh, it's going to cost you a few hundred. That's okay. You can always resell them if you don't want to get into it or pass it on to someone else, and they'll buy it from you pre-owned. A lot of people buy a lot of pre-owned equipment. Most of mine is pre-owned equipment. So don't be concerned that once you buy a radio, it's like buying a car with a great depreciation. There's not a great depreciation in ham gear. Not really. So if there's anyone else who would like to come aboard, whether you be on Skype or whether you be on this EchoLink frequency, please come aboard now. We're a friendly group. It's a good way to start, is to talk among friendly folk that we're not going to require you to give call signs or require you to do this or that. Just come aboard and say hello, anyone that would like to. This is Kilo Delta Zero, Charlie Delta Quebec, Mike in Olathe, Kansas, inviting anyone to come on aboard and say hello and say a little bit. Go now.
Victor Hotel.
Sierra United November.
EW with a comment, Mike.
RMO.
I think KF5VH had a comment, Steve, in Louisiana. In Lafayette, go ahead, please, if that's you.
Good evening, Mike. Good evening, everyone. The earlier question about broadcast and music transmissions, you can read it for yourself, Part 97.1135 Charlie. I know about this because one of my repeaters used to rebroadcast the National Weather Service watches and warnings automatically. It is permitted. Manned spacecraft is permitted within the language of the rule. 97.1135 Charlie, KF5VH.
Thank you for that. We really appreciate that, Steve. Yes, I do recall back in the day when I took the tech license, whatever that was, I do remember that you could communicate with a satellite with music, but I don't ever intend to communicate with a satellite with music. But yes, it's a right, and you're very right. You're reading the rules. You got them right in front of you. Thank you again, Steve, and we appreciate KFIVH in Lafayette, Louisiana, coming aboard. Anyone else have a comment they'd like to make? I think Kathy was in there. I'm not sure, but I think I heard K6SUN. Was that you? Go ahead now.
Yes, Mike, that was myself, and I think after there was RMO, Gary, and hopefully Stephanie coming aboard. But I wanted to say thank you to both you, Bill, and you, Paul, for a grand session. I think my system was pretty much there, got the recording, but it is very stormy here in the land right now. We did hear just about everything, but I did want to thank each and every one of you for being here tonight, and hopefully you'll join us on Tuesday, same time, same station, and same instructors. Once again, everyone have a grand evening, but I did want to say thank you to each and every one of you. Back to you, Mike, and it looks like you are going back to school very soon. KD0CDQ from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Yes, Kathy, in answer to your question, we go back on August the 8th. August the 8th is our first day back, but our students don't come till the following Friday. So we get a week of professional development, which means I get to hide out for a week before the kids show up. Hey, KC2RMO, you've got a comment. Please go now.
Hey, thank you. And we've moved our droid and ourselves out to the deck just to check out the weather, because it was kind of looking a little threatening, but it's not too bad, just really humid. But I just wanted to say it's great to hear Bill and Mike and Paul, and wow, we got another class going. It's just great to hear that. And I did want to say that my darling wife, Steph, is in the class, and she's been listening attentively to the class, and responding to the questions back and forth with me too. So I'm going to publicly announce that if she gets that license, I will buy her her very own Baofeng. Top of the line, but we'll start her out with that Baofeng and get her going. So just wanted to give some incentive to her, and if Steph wants to come aboard on Skype, once again, we'll give her a little bit of an incentive. But we'll go back to the net right now. This is KC2RMO, back to you.
Gary, I have friends that have those radios. I hope you buy the programming program. Manually, it can be pretty ticklish, I think, to load some of the information on those radios. You might chase her away from ham radio if you give her a Baofeng. But those radios work fine. Fellows have them. There's no problem. The only thing is the programming. I don't have one, so I don't know what they're running into, and same with the other brands, too. But once they're loaded, I think they're quite okay. Anyone else have a comment? I see a comment from KM4. A-O-O. Go ahead now, please.
Yeah, letting everything cycle there for a minute. The other thing that I've heard people say is a good way to get people interested is field day. And just to make this clear, but you guys can correct me, especially Paul. Paul's been in it just by his call. Because it's a 2x1 call, so he can probably correct me on this. But they do also have a winter field day. Not in all places, but they do have a winter field day. But field day in general is a good way to do it. Last time I was at field day this past month, couple of weeks, whenever it was, I did the band I did last time. Two-meter sideband frequency, so that was pretty fun. So, yeah, but Mike, I believe they have a winter field day too in most places, but I'm not sure on that.
Well, there's a lot of activities. We have what they call a Kansas CUSO. I think every month has it. Every state has it. We have where people can make contact with your state when people are filling out the map of the world deal. So that, I think it just passed as well. But yeah, we have it at different times of the year. We have different events that people can call in so they can get us. That's for HF folks that want to get different states that we do that. But there's a lot of opportunity to get on the air. There's so many nets. Like on Tuesday nights, I do 6 nets on that one night alone. So when we have this class on Tuesday night, I'll be missing a few. But by, I'm thinking your time, by 8:30 your time, I will run away from the radio and get on my HF, because that's a particular net I want to get onto. But yeah, it's fun to get on nets. It helps you. People will help you too. So with new hams, you just give your call on the radio, and it's a little scary, and they'll recognize that they hear you, and you know your radio is working. So many hams will do nets on different HF and 2 meter, 440, or EchoLink, or on PSK31, doing the digitals, just to make sure that their radios are working right and they don't get rusty. Because I'll tell you, if I get away from some of this for a while, I get a little rusty trying to make contact in certain places. So it's a good thing to get practice every week. Check your radio out, say hello to the world, and let them say hello back to you. Anybody else have any comments? We're running at 5 minutes after the hour. I won't give you the hour it is here, because here in Kansas, we're an hour behind most of you. And we don't have any mountains to block the sun to the west. We don't have much of anything to the west to block the sun to the west. And even the people that are standing up aren't that tall, so we don't get any. We get to be sunshine here until about 9 o'clock at night this time of year. So I still got a sun high in the sky here in Kansas, high as a pizza pie, I guess. Anybody have a comment? This is KD0CDQ in Olathe, Kansas, saying, does anybody want to make a comment on this band? Come on, say hello on this Echo Link node tonight.
Juliet Link.
Go ahead. I'm sorry I didn't catch the call, but go ahead, please.
This is V3MEW. Mike, I think KC2RMO might want to get in there as well with another comment. One thing we do up here whenever we have people go through the class, we Elmer them afterwards. We stick with them. We call them up on the telephone. And we have a number of social functions which are not critical. In other words, you don't need a tuxedo to come out to them. There are coffee breaks in the local coffee shop and amateur radio breakfasts on Saturday mornings and so on. Invitations to talk to people on the phone is, hey, I'm going to be running a contest this weekend. You have any interest in seeing how I do that? Come on over and maybe we'll sit down and have a coffee together and a donut or something and just chat. And it helps people get familiar with their fellow amateurs, who they are, find out they're real people with a real name and they have families and dogs and cats and bills to pay and groceries to buy like everybody else. And this sets up a familiarity between people so that it's a little easier to get them to come on the radio and introduce themselves with their call sign and participate in some of the local nets that we have. And like Richard said, get them to come out to field functions that we may have. Maybe come out and just watch us provide communications for an event such as the Trent Regatta and so on, and join us, you know, for an hour or two and see how we do it, see how much fun it is, and so on. So I think that's also important, to keep in touch with people and pick up the phone once in a while and say, hey, hi, how you doing, Mike? Haven't heard you for a while there. What's up, buddy? You know, you want to get together for a coffee and so on and so forth. We're going down to the Hamfest today. Anybody, well, you want to come? You want to ride down with me to the Hamfest and we'll enjoy the day? Things like that, I think, help out a great deal, Mike. Back to you, V3MEW.
Yes, CDQ here. I agree with you 100%. We have a fellow that has received awards from the ARRL as a team out here. They have licensed way over 500 new hams in about the last 5 years. And so they got a trophy for that. And we don't have access to their addresses and email addresses. Only that team has access. But we do, through the Emergency Communication Service, hold meetings to get the people to come out of the woodwork, shall we say, to come out of the mist. And we usually have them in churches because they have the halls and they're open to us to do that. And we've had those meetings, Bill. We don't get too many to show up, but those who do, we find that some of them have not been on the air yet. So part of the deal, we don't tell them in advance, of course, but part of the deal when we gather them together, a little social, we have a two-meter band set up just for that purpose, and we let them get on the radio for the first time, and it's surprising how many folks do not make use of their license. Yeah, Bill, it'd be nice if we could do some socialness, but my club has classes too. We had an extra class just a few months ago, so that's a smaller group, like 20, 21 people. We can keep track of them. We can keep track of 20 at a time, but with that large number, that team that's doing that teaching rush, I do see some of them show up, but they don't seem to keep contact with the big group. Anyone else have a comment? I think we have a comment. KC2RMO. Gary, you had a comment. Go ahead, please.
Hey, thank you. Actually, I'm okay. I was just commenting on the chirp software for the Balfang. So I'm good. But the other stuff, the RTS, I have to check that out. The stuff that Baofeng sends is awful. You can't even, the headers are in Chinese, unless you know the trick to turn them into English. And it doesn't work anyway, so it may as well stay in Chinese. But Chirp works. It's just kind of a lousy program, but I'd appreciate that other stuff, so I'm going to check it out. I'll pay a couple of bucks even to program it well, but mine works great. I'm actually pretty happy with it. So I mean, it's the best $30 radio I ever got. Not complaining. So with that, we'll go back to the net. This is KC2RMO.
Such a deal. One of the members of the club, he's 86, and his 62-year-old son is home from China. His son is 62. He had to come back here to start his Social Security. He couldn't start it from China. He's a teacher over there. And when he looks at the instructions that come from China, he says, what is this? He's been there, you know, a number of years. He's been there since his youth as an instructor, college instructor, and he's engineering. And he looks at the instructions that they send with the Bofangs and whatnot, and he laughs. He says, I don't even know what this says to do. I can't even make this out. So what are we to do? So, yeah, the best thing to do is to get some kind of a program you can do in your computer and let it load it for you. Some guys are catching on to that. Those radios are all around. $30, what a deal. Such a deal, $30. I thought they were a bit more than that, but, yeah. Any way you can get on the air, that's great. Any way you can get on the air. Okay, anybody else have any comments? We've been on here for an hour and 12, if my computer's showing me right. I'm about ready to bail from this. I don't know if anybody else wants to say something. Go now, and then we'll stop the recordings if they haven't been stopped already. I'll see if anyone else has a comment before we shut down. Go now.
KM4AOO, I have a couple more, and then I have to go myself.
Sierra United November. Mike, Jim, I think N4UJL through, Gary's system has been trying to get in for quite some time. So can you pick him up first? And that is through Gary's assist.
Okay, I thought I was talking with Gary, KC2RMO. You have a comment you want to make again? Go ahead, please.
Six Victor, Mike.
Yes, I think we already picked up on Gary again, but go ahead, Gordon. Go now, please.
Yeah, I think I was a little confusing. N4UJL, that's Jim, in Northern Florida, who is coming in through Skype, was trying to get to you, sir. And obviously, he's coming through RMO's Skype rebroadcast. Over.
Okay, if you want to try to come through, we'll listen. I don't know that I can. I don't know that I'll be able to hear him. So I'll go quiet for a while, and we'll see if you want to come in on Skype. Come on, Skype now. Come on now, please.
Yes, I'm trying again. Can anybody copy me? This is N4UJL.
Gotcha. Go ahead, guy. I got you there. Go ahead.
Very good. Well, thank everybody for your work. I appreciate it. I'm on here because of a neighbor that's a youngster that I took to field day locally in Clay County, Florida. And he didn't make it tonight, but I'm interested in how to get the podcast for him, and I'll try to get him on for Tuesday. Over.
Okay, the best person to probably tell you that, I don't know if Kathy, do you want to explain to him how he can pick this up on the internet, or if you want to do it, Gordon? Either way, we have another student who would like to pick up the recording. I'll turn it back to K6SUN. If you want to try it, pick it up, please.
All right, Mike, I'd be happy to. And Jim, you can pick up the podcast normally on our website. How soon they'll be there, I'm not sure. They are really done through, I believe, N4FTD. He puts them in there once Gordon sends them to him. But they should be there rather quickly. And if there is a problem, and I think Gordon will agree with this, we do have the recordings, both he and I, and we can actually get those to you if you have Skype or if you have Dropbox. But, you know, Mike, let me just throw it to Gordon here for just a moment and see if he agrees with this. So if there is something that needs to be gotten there before they can be put on the website, we definitely have a way to do it. So, KY6V, do you want to make any other comments to what I just said?
Well, thank you, Kathy. Jim, we should have that recording on the website tomorrow morning for this evening's production. Just direct Lyman to that, and he'll be caught up, when he gets back from camp or whatever. Normally, this does not take very long. We can do two things. We can put it on our website, number one, and then put it on our teaching tutorial, you know, the teaching page, which are two different websites, but we work it out as we can. Jim, over.
Yes, sir, and thank you for the additional, Kathy. I'm trying to get him to act on this and get with you. I've given him the instructions, but he just got in yesterday from camp, and I think he's still involved in that. So he may have to do the whole thing by podcast, and that's why I want to know how to reach you. I've been looking at your website, and I haven't found the link yet, so I'm probably technically challenged here. It took me a while to plug in my microphone. I've enjoyed the evening with y'all. Thank you, and back over to you.
Victor, are the recordings still going? And if they are, let me know, and we'll go for silence so you can cut the recordings off. Yeah, let me know what the situation is, the status on the recordings. Over.
All right, the first session here will probably be duplicity. We'll put it on our main site and then put it on our training site at the same time. So just stay with me, Jim, and we'll make it happen. Over.
Roger that. Thank you very much. 7-3 from N4UJL.
Okay. Over to you, Mike. Give me 30 seconds to pull the pin when you're ready. KY6V, over.
Okay, this concludes the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, Session 1 of the Technician Class 2014. We went through sub-element 1 today, and come back on Tuesday, which will be 2 days hence, with the 22nd. Yeah. 22nd, yes, the 22nd of July, we'll be back here, same time, 7 p.m. Eastern, on the same node, 96140, or IRLP 9614. We'll be back here again, same time, same station, with sub-elements 2 and 3. So we're going to go silent now. Go silent now, everyone, please, so Gordon can disconnect the recordings. Over, KD0, CDQ. Good night.
CE3, MEW, KM4, AOO.
Yeah, stand by for a second, Richard.